We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to another episode of Candid Coaches Conversations. This week, we have another group of highly touted assistant coaches, guys that we brought together, and a couple of so-called journalists, including myself, I guess. But we have Rob Doster, as usual. He will actually move in this podcast, I think. He will not look like a statue. And we have CBS's Matt Norlander. And the topic this week will be rules and rule changes, rule proposals. You'll hear a lot of these guys talk candidly what they like, what they don't like, whether it's on the court or hopefully some of the rules off the court as well. So the last few weeks, we've tried to change it up topic-wise. This week's we'll talk about rules with some of the recommendations that are out there. You know, the rule oversight panel is going to, I think, vote on this early June. Norlander's probably got some more info on this. But the big ones are obviously whether they go to six fouls. That's a big one. Probably not going to happen. Technicals for flopping. No warnings anymore. I don't know, live stats. I guess you're going to be able to use some equipment potentially on the bench if the leagues approve it. It's kind of an experimental rule where you can download previously downloaded video and live stats during games. Let's start. Norlander, what am I forgetting? Am I forgetting anything else that's of relevance?
Team timeouts will replace media timeouts, which is definitely inside baseball, but I think it's actually really good for the consumer. It will make it has the potential to have games be 3 to 5 to 7 minutes shorter overall. And then shot clocks will, if the school wants to, it can be like an NBA shot clock. It can show tenths of a second on the shot clock for the entirety of the game. That will be on a school by school basis. But yes, flopping can potentially result in a technical foul, et cetera, et cetera. The only thing that will be experimented in the NIT next year will be the six foul rule, which is obviously the most interesting one. Everything else, if it gets passed by prop, will be implemented immediately for next season.
All right, so I'm going to start with Cody because Cody came from the NBA, and I think obviously we know it's a different game, but you dealt with six fouls, and now you've been in college for a couple of years. How do you feel about college basketball going from five to six?
I mean, to me, the big key is that there's an additional 8 minutes, right, at the professional level. So the need for those additional fouls is there. Otherwise, you would see – you know, star players fouling out early in games and you can't have that. I think that the big thing that from my experience, and again, it's only 2 years and you guys have been killing it, doing it for years and years and years. You guys can tell me I'm insane, but just as an outsider coming in is there's such a bigger pool of teams right at the college level. It's much harder to have consistency from game to game on the officiating side with only 30 teams and only, you know, whatever it is, so however many officials we had in the league, it's a smaller group. So it's a smaller group to teach the nuances of how to make the calls. And what you get is consistency across the board from game to game. That doesn't mean they're going to get everyone right. But my point being things like the charge calls, right? Like rerouting drivers, right? Hand checking. It's so inconsistent that one game, your best player might have two fouls in the first 5 minutes, but the next game, you might do the exact same thing and both of those fouls go not called, right? So the lack of consistency would be the only thing that leads me to believe an additional foul could be needed. But again, we don't have that extra 8 minutes, so I really don't see a need for that change.
Anybody want to go to six?
Oh, hell no. So for me, all right, outside of inconsistency, why in the world would they put all these stipulations on foul calls? Like, so say, for instance, you can get a kid that has zero fouls in the first half, and you have four fouls in the second half. Well, we all know that's the moment of truth. That's the most intense part of a game, and you can get disqualified. That makes no sense. If you're going to go to six without any stipulations. You know, the same thing. If you have, why have you get three in the first half, you get three in the second half. That's fine. But if you get a kid to get one foul in the first half, you get four in the second half. What's the point of going to six? And so people forget, I think in the early 90s, the Big East and the TAC, I think it was the Atlantic Sun, they experimented with this. All right. So that's how the Big East became, I guess, the rugged Big East. It was foul calls and the games that got extended. Do we want that again? I don't mind the six. I don't mind going to six, all right? But if you're going to go to six, why have stipulations on it? That's all I'm saying.
I agree with Jonas a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, went to the Matha High School. You know, I lived those Big East days, Jonas, where they had six fouls, you know, Watching Georgetown and Villanova and St. John's play. And those games were bloodbaths, man. You know, I mean, obviously there was some talent on the floor and everything like that, but, like, it was survival of the fittest. And that's not like how I interpret the game should be played. And I just think, you know, I think Cody makes a good point too about, you know, we're playing eight less minutes. You know, I just don't see there's any need for six fouls.
I think it should be six fouls because your best player, when you get two, the coach put him on the bench for the whole first half. And so that's a disadvantage if the ref's not going to be consistent and your best player is sitting on the bench. If it has six fouls, you'll be more inclined to leave him in the game until he get three. You know, three the first half, three the second half. So I think the fouls protect the best players, and the best players drive the product. And so we need the product to be good. The NBA got more stars in our game, so we need our best players on the court. And if you're not like Boeheim, where you're only playing six players, you know, don't nobody want to see the best player sitting on the bench. I know I don't. I think it's a whack rule. I wish they would move to six fouls and 24 seconds on
the
shot clock.
Yeah, well, with the new transfer rule, it's going to be quarters. Hard to play more than eight or nine guys anyway. So a lot of people ain't going to have big rotations unless you're going to go platoon anyway. I get what you're saying by getting, you know, after your second foul, you putting on the bench. But it's the same thing if you get your third foul in this scenario with no stipulation. You know, I don't know a coach in his right mind going to allow a player to get four fouls and a half, but it does happen. Right now, you get two fouls. Some coaches let them play and they get a third foul. But they don't get penalized for that. If you get a third foul, you're not done for the rest of the game. You just sit out and you got two fouls to get in the second half.
Some coaches overcoach. I know when I was in college, my coach let you play in the first half with three fouls. Because, again, he don't sub. He don't believe in playing 9 and 10. He only going to play 6 and a half, maybe 7. So the six foul would keep the better players on the court driving the product because we want to see the best players.
I agree with Jason because it's the game is supposed to be about our players. What's best for our players and what's best for our game. And I think when you can protect and allow the players to have six fouls to go compete, and especially you see the numbers in the NBA. I think you just like Jason said, you know, the product is our kids and our players, and that's who we need to protect. And I think you have a better game.
I'll play devil's advocate on this one. Because why? I like the idea of going to six fouls for all the reasons that you guys are mentioning, but why is there this auto bench with two fouls in the first half?
It shouldn't be. That's exactly right. So, you know, that brings up a really good point because there was like a study at the NBA level talking about foul trouble, whether we put guys to the bench too soon with fouls and don't let them play with fouls. And like the data shows that letting the guys play with the fouls more often than not, they actually don't get that next foul. So it's an interesting point.
It depends on the player too, because we couldn't put Frank Mason out there with two fouls and say, Frank, hey, don't get your third. He getting his third the next one just because how competitive and tough. But I think it has a lot to do with personnel, your player. But that's a good point.
That's what we think, though. Like, we always think the guy's going to get it. Like, that's the interesting thing. Right. And what you're seeing in the NBA now is the guys are letting the guys rock with fouls. So it's like, yeah, like, to your hey, because you can't have Frank get three fouls in the first half. Y'all, I mean, that's your guy, right? So, but in the same sense, I mean, what if we think that he's going to get it, but – Maybe we can actually trust him more than we think. Who knows?
I have a question for the veteran coaches here that have been around, you know, Andre, CY, Rod, among them. The Big East stuff gets referenced in how it was a failed experiment 30 years ago. But do we think that the modern college game, the way it's played, the way that it has been changed and officiated the past 5 years? Remember when we were talking 6-7 years ago about how, you know, we needed to clean up the game and make it more fluid, more cosmetically appealing, right? It feels like there has been good gains on that. So is there the potential that with this rule, which again, will just be done at the NIT level just to see how it goes. And I think that's actually the right process here. But do you believe that the Division I men's basketball is a cleaner game in 2021 by small margins, major margins, no margins at all versus what the Big East was in the late 80s, early 90s?
Matt, go ahead.
I'll jump on here. Like, for me personally, I think it could help offensively with the screen and stuff. Like in the NBA, they get away with the offensive screening a lot more. In the college game, our post guys are sometimes scared to set screens because they're scared to get a foul that way. So most of our fouls come on the defensive side of the ball, it seems. So by allowing six, maybe we could get our post guys or our guys setting better screens and getting those guys to screen more without having the concern of getting the fouls that way. So that would be one reason why I think the six may help the game a little bit.
You know, Matt, I agree with what you're saying, Matt. Like, I mean, I do think the officiating has gotten better, and we've tried to call the first fouls and hand checking. I think we've improved that. But I just feel sometimes, though, especially in the ACC, as we move on and see, like, probably test this, like, I just feel like it gets more physical as we get into conference play. You know, it really does. And then it gets corralled back in the NCAA tournament because those guys want to advance. So because we're seeing the same guys night in and night out in the ACC. So, I do agree with you. I because those were bloodbaths, man. Some of those fouls were – that's not basketball. But
let's not forget about the Big Ten. Back in the day, the Big Ten in the early 90s and with those teams, I mean, it came down to coaching. It came down to of who was going to foul late. And, I mean, it was just a bloodbath. Those guys were physical. And growing up on Big Ten basketball, that, as a point guard, you kind of knew that's what you was getting into when you was being recruited. And other conferences used to use that to their advantage and negative recruit the Big Ten. Oh, you're going to play slow basketball, half-court basketball, and, you know, the score is going to be 54 to the 60, you know, games like that. But it was old school basketball where you got punished if you went in there in the paint. They made you pay for it. So growing up on that style of play, that's all you knew. And now I think the game is definitely a little softer. They have done a good job of cleaning up. But just growing up on those Big Ten basketball teams and coaches, those are really good teams.
Fellas, I think I'm with Jason and some of the other guys in terms of six fouls, and my reasoning is probably a little different. I think human nature is a beast, and you got to help with human error. I mean, everybody on this call has sat during a game and said, come on, man, that's a bad call. Like, how many times during a game do you look around, you say, that's a bad call? So all of us get bad calls, especially when you're on the road and in the ACC or the Big Ten, the SEC. Human nature is a beast. So when the crowds come back, it's kind of human nature for the official to kind of get emotional with the crowd and make some calls. I think it takes the pressure off for these bad calls that are made. Jalen Hamilton, he don't care what y'all say or anybody says. If a guy gets two fouls, he's sitting on that bench because he don't think he's going. He don't think he's going to defend and play hard. He thinks he's going to not go hard, give up some buckets just because he's trying to stay in the game. So if it was up to me, Jason Hart saying the best players on the court and it drives the product, that's the truest thing I've heard.
It's that balance, right? I mean, it is that balance. You want the best players to be on the floor, but you're afraid of the way the game might look if you're giving everybody six fouls, right? Like, especially next year, I think the game's going to be so ugly at the beginning of next year anyway with all the turnover among rosters. And if you added like six fouls, I just think it could be a train wreck in terms of the quality of the play as much as anything. All right, we've gone through that. Let's go around the room a little bit of like, what's the one rule that you guys would change? And it could be, you could have one on the court, you could have one off the court. I want to hear the one off the court as much as the one on, because I think it'd be more interesting. All right, Chris Kreider, let's start with you. You haven't said anything yet. You've been kind of just listening. What do you got? What rules would you change, rule or rules?
And we're talking about just overall NCAA. So if I had to say one thing, I think all of us, you know, in our positions, we, you know, being compliant, and compliance is always so important. And we try to follow the rules to a T. I know for myself, you know, how many text calls do we make to our compliance department when something comes up? Hey, can I do this? Something that I think, you know, we recruit these guys and we're basketball coaches, and you go through the recruiting process, they arrive on your campus and you want to coach them. And I understand why the rules are what they are, but just the whole time and the countable hours, I think sometimes the time that we're allowed to spend on the court, once you reach that number, so let's say 4 hours a week, a guy wants to get extra shots, you know, wants to work out, watch some film. I just think I find it as being an internal struggle. Hey, go grab a GA, go grab a manager. Hey, I'll get you on the next go round. You know, so you want to follow the rules, but at the same time, you want to do what's right for the kid. You recruited him, trying to help him. So for me, that's a balance.
Kason, what do you got? You haven't spoken either.
It's a lot. I definitely agree with a lot of things that's been said. If I ever changed the rule, it'd definitely be the 6 fouls, just off the top of my head, from the simple standpoint of the product. You're going to have coaches, especially old school coaches, like CY said, in terms of like Leonard Hamlin, he's sitting guys. And that's going to be the case if they got 5 fouls, because if you're looking at it, your margin of error is high, piloted more than getting 3 fouls, opposed to you're going to save 3 fouls in the second half. And at the end of the day, we all need our best players to close the game. So that's the rule I'm hoping to change moving forward, and just giving these guys a better feel of what a professional level is with the 6 fouls and playing like that. Because like CY said, there's going to be times where it's a lot of room of error when a referee makes a bad call, and it can cost you. You can get your guy to 4 fouls, and now you got to sit down to the last 3-4 minutes of the game. So that's the rule I hope would change.
Hey, I got one for you before I let you go on this one. How bad is it when you play bye games? How bad is the officiating when you play bye games against some of these guys?
Oh, they're not
get any calls?
No, they don't let you get out of there. No calls. And for us, me being a guy that's more so of a low major school, you hope some people hope the 5 fouls, because that helps you in the game, because your best player does go to the bench if he happens to pick up a foul and get a charge call. But like I said, I just want the game of basketball NCAA wise to grow.
All right, who else has got a good one? Who else has got something maybe a little bit outside the box? Jason?
I got a question. There's a lot of smart basketball minds on this call, Goodman not included. I hate the fact that the charge exists the way that it exists in college basketball. I want to know from you guys, do you hate it as much as I do? Because there's nothing that I can't stand more than watching a defender slide in underneath somebody going to the rim, fall down, and get rewarded with a charge called on it.
Silence. No.
Yeah. No, I hate the charge call. I think that too much at this level, they coach up taking charges, right, as a strategy. And to me, I think, number one, it's dangerous. Number two, I think if a guy gets in the air before you get to the spot, you should have no shot at getting that call. And honestly, it drives me nuts. I mean, especially to go play a Kelvin Sampson team, those guys are disciplined. So their low man's there, he's getting outside the charge circle, and he's going down on any contact. So to me, even whether and that's the problem again, that goes back to the inconsistencies from game to game that are attributed to me to the fact that, again, we got so many games, so many teams, it's just not called equally. And so it's really it disrupts the game. And that's where you get into the issues like Jason was touching on, your top players attacking the rim and they're not getting that call. It's brutal. So it's a killer. I can't stand it. And we talk about screening. Andre mentioned screening. It's another one I can't stand. The illegal screen calls are like totally wildly inconsistent. And I just – I'm not a big fan.
But I do think if you teach your guys the right way, I think the using charges, I think it's your advantage.
Heck yeah, I agree with that.
I know I haven't worked for Coach Beard that much, but preparing for him, I think they have a rule. We have a rule to get 7 or 8 charges a game. And, you know, the times they beat us in the past at Texas, when he was at Texas Tech, they had 5 or 6 charges, and it was a difference in the game. So I definitely understand where you guys come from. But if you teach it the right way and you're consistent and you have a culture where you're doing it in practice, and that's what you know for, I think it's definitely an advantage.
Yeah, I'm a little bit old school too, because, you know, I played for Morgan Wooten at DeMatha High School. And, you know, if I had to step in and take a charge, you know, that buzzer was going off, man. I was coming out, you know. So it's kind of ingrained with me. But I understand what Cody's saying too. I do think, you know, one of the rules that I thought was really going to pass, I know Matt went through some of them there, but I thought we were going to widen the lane. I thought that would help out a little bit. I didn't think the charge circle, you know, Mike was on the rules committee when they put the charge circle and then they moved it back. But I really was hoping that they would have a wider lane. I think that would even open it up even a little bit more. But obviously they tabled that for this year. But, yeah, it's an interesting call, especially for us old school guys.
How do you guys feel about on-ball charges? That's another one that's wildly consistent. Like where a guy's sliding and he's actually like – because at the NBA level, the guy with the ball owns the space, right? So if I'm driving and you reroute me, that's a foul on you. Like even if you read and jump in the way and fall down, you got in my way. I own that space, right? So like, that, I don't know how you guys feel about that one. That's another one that, I mean, there are certain teams, like Jaren said, man, I mean, that are very unbelievably disciplined and very well coached at using those things to their advantage.
I mean, Davion Mitchell was the best at that, right? Like he was able to just get in front of somebody and take the charge. I honestly don't mind that one as much. Because if you're beating someone to the spot, I feel like you kind of earn it. It's the ones where someone slides over and is not even trying to make a play on the ball, right? Like we talk about what's best for the game and want to see your best players make a play. Do you want to see someone try to block a shot at the rim, block a dunk at the rim, maybe get dunked on, maybe get a poster, maybe get a highlight, maybe get something on SportsCenter? Or do you want to see your best player going up and getting undercut and falling down and maybe he's getting two free throws out of it? Maybe he's picking up his third foul in the first half because it was a bad charge call. I don't know. I hate the off ball secondary defender fall down to a spot. It's not basketball to me.
Speaking of Donovan Mitchell, he was one of the best on the ball defenders I've seen because he wouldn't let you set a ball screen. How many times can you say? I think Marcus Garrett did it a few times, but when you run continuous ball screens, we'll run four or five ball screens. And he had never he just got over it and beat you to the spot. So I think we got guys like that. And that's a whole other level, like right there. But I'm with you. Like my high school coach, like you got to reward it by taking charges. So I'm a big fan of charges. I'm sorry, fellas.
Hey, my thing is, man, I think it should be one basketball. I think that'll help the game. If we're under the NCAA rule, let's have one basketball so everybody can stay hot all the time. And play basketball. We the only league in the world that changed balls going from city to city.
Why is that though, Jason?
Because it's for money that none of the players get. I totally get it, but like in the NCAA, they own the tournament, so we play with one ball and everybody getting the rhythm. Let's do one ball, one universal basketball.
Because even with preparation, you go play Texas Tech, you got to go get out your Under Armour balls. You go play Memphis, you got to get out the Nike balls. It's us.
And so when we go play on the mountain trip, Utah's Under Armour. Then we fly from Utah to go to Colorado. They're Nike. So we switch balls. And then we come on and play UCLA. That's Adidas ball. And then we'll play our game. That's a Nike ball. Like,
I'm surprised.
Only the NCAA. Only the NCAA can't figure this shit out. Seriously.
One basketball.
And we should have four quarters, too.
Just hey, like yes, the women's game got 100%.
Let's go four quarters.
Hey, Goodman, stop using profanity on our good family
I'm
show.
I'm sorry, I know. I do it every time, every week.
Not the mighty.
Hey, see why he meant that too. He felt that came from.
But Hart is right. We can't beat Notre Dame because of them Under Armour balls.
We play with the Wilson ball, by the way, CY. All right, so we wear Under Armour shoes, but we don't play with that.
Wilson ball.
Yeah.
What y'all think about four quarters?
I'm not a big fan. I just think it changes our game, but I know there's some movement towards that.
I'm going to four quarters. It break the game down much easier. That 20 minutes on the clock, that's like AAU. Yeah. 12 minutes, you get in a better rhythm. You get your TV timeouts like the NBA. You get your group in and out. I wish we did four quarters.
Well, I did some reporting on this last week on it. So I don't know when we're getting four quarters because the problem is men's college basketball is different from every other sport in that the NFL has a TV deal with all of its, you know, with all the channels that air NFL games. The same thing with the NBA. The contracts always end at the same time. And in the women's game, you only had – a handful of games on television across a couple of networks so that it was not hard to restructure the TV contract. In men's college basketball, the CBS deal doesn't end at the same time as the Fox deal, doesn't end at the same time as the ESPN deal. So you cannot have a situation where ESPN goes, okay, we're cool if we want to completely restructure how we send our commercials and ad money to a template that aligns with four quarters. But then you've got the Big Ten Network that's got two more years after that. Fox has three more years. CBS has five more years after that. You have to have all of the television contracts end at the same point so that you can restructure. At least that's how it was explained to me by a TV executive and someone at the NCAA level. So I think everyone wants to get to, or not everyone, but a lot of people want to get to the four quarters because it makes sense. It's a logical progression. But television money is the thing that is preventing this from happening. And the feedback I got was, if this ever happens, it's at least 10, 15 years out. Once we get beyond the current media landscape of how college basketball is broadcast on traditional television.
I think
so there are a problem with really how many stoppages of play there are. Like, how would that be impacted, right? If there's 10 stoppages of a play in a game, right, and the companies are paying for their 10 spots or whatever it is, like, are we taking away stoppages of play?
Yes. Or there would
how
be.
Many,
yes.
Do you know how many? Do you know the number?
There would be. That's what I was told. There would be a reduction in quarters because you would only have them at the quarter breaks, and then it's kind
you
of.
You should have. So you should have, right? So each team should get a timeout, right? You're under seven, you're under three, your quarter break. And if, I mean, just throwing it out there, right? You can give them the idea. Just add however many timeouts, you get like a throwaway 20-second timeout, and now you come to the same amount of stoppage to play that you had with the other one.
I think it's solvable, but it's something that I think takes a true concerted effort, and all the invested parties are not interested in doing it at this point, because you're involving the rules committee, the conferences that have their own TV deals, right, Cody? And then the television executives who lord over so much of this. Like, it is something that's solvable, and I'm kind of ambivalent on it. I would like to see it, but if it doesn't happen, I'm okay with it. But the situation you're presenting there, yeah, absolutely. I think it is something that we can conquer, but I just don't think it's – I think we'll look up in 10 years and men's college basketball is still going to be a two-half game.
I mean, I think there's two things that really, really matter for this, at least for me. It's the watchability of the product on TV, right? There's nothing more frustrating than when you get that TV timeout at the under 16 and then with 15 minutes and 45 seconds left, somebody calls a timeout in the second half. So you get that 3-minute TV timeout, then you come back and play for 10 seconds, then another 3 minutes.
But that's going away. That's going away.
So that's good if you get rid of that. Yeah. The other part of it is that when you, with all of these fouls that are called, when both teams are in the bonus with 11 minutes left in a half and you just have nothing but free throws down the stretch of the game, like that can really kill stuff too, especially when you're in the tournament and there's so many tightly called games and there's a lot of fouls. So the rule to reset the fouls at 10 minutes, Matt, I don't know if that's something that is actually going to end up happening, but to me, that makes a lot of sense. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It just makes the product on TV better.
They didn't, I don't know why they didn't. So that was discussed, basically going to a fake four quarters format, but they didn't do it because I know there's enough coaches still that still like the 1-1. And if you go to four quarters and do the fouls, like you don't have the 1-1 anymore, which I kind of understand why they would resist that. But I think that's why this was on the table. This was discussed last week, but they just decided that they were not ready to abandon the 1-1 concept, which has its pros and cons overall. But I think that was the major factor in why it wasn't passed along for even experimentation at the NIT level, the way that the 6-foul rule is.
Let me tell you guys a little bit about our partners over at Bet Rivers Sportsbook. If you haven't signed up with Bet Rivers yet, now is the time. Bet Rivers Sportsbook is offering a $250 match bonus for your first deposit. But what sets them apart? They require just one playthrough to turn your bonus into cash money. When you win at Bet Rivers Sportsbook, they pay fast. And now it's even faster with Rush Pay instant approval for withdrawals. It's safe, it's secure, it's reliable. Go to BetRivers.com today or download the app. Must be 21 years or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Quick break from Jeff and the gang inside. Today's show is brought to you in part by LinkedIn. Small businesses have always shown an incredible ability to adapt, innovate, and survive, and even more so in the past year. Now, another way you can help adapt and grow is by finding the right people to help grow your business, and LinkedIn Jobs helps you do that for free. As someone who helps run a small business, I gotta tell you, as we get back on track here and more back to normal, finding the right people to help your business grow again and soar to new heights is the most important thing right now. Get started today by posting your job for free to reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. Fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation you need. Then with simple filtering and management tools, you can easily review, rate, and hone in on your top candidates. LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person for your role, and your first job post is free thanks to this podcast. This is at linkedin.com/good. Again, that's linkedin.com/good to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, who else has some ideas for rule changes overall?
Yeah, one thing I have, Jeff, especially off the court, and Chris kind of alluded to this early when he was talking about, having managers go work out with our guys and so forth. And I think in the ACC, CY probably saw the email today, but I think we're going to kind of go to this. And this started with the pandemic of the last summer. But I really feel like your graduate assistant or your operations guy or something like that, like, one of the things I've been proud of here, being here at Notre Dame for 21 years, especially the last half of my career. Obviously, you're here for 21 years because you had success on the court and off the court. You're doing things the right way. But one of the things I've taken a lot of pride in is like mentoring some young coaches on our staff, including in the last 5 or 6 years, guys that play for us, and probably even more important, young Black coaches that are starting their careers out. That I think that this is just such an important step for those guys. And for those guys not to be able to get on the court and actually work with guys, I just think that's just not right. For example, like a couple of years ago, we had Eric Atkins, who's an assistant at GW right now, who will be a head coach here shortly, was in our video role and everything like that. And, our young apprentice sub when he was a freshman, Eric was on our staff and, he wasn't able to go work, they're both from the DMV area. They had to develop a great relationship off the court. Like, Eric Atkins should be able to go help Prentice Hub out on the court, like to help, he was a very good point guard for us to help, teach him some stuff, the nuances of the game and so forth. I just think we're getting, we got something today where I think we're going to get to that point. At least we're going to experiment with this summer to be able to do that. I just think that's so important, to be able to get on the court and interact with guys. I know the recruiting piece is one thing to be able to get out and recruit, but there's a lot of recruiting that's done off the court too, that those guys are involved with, which I think helps prepare those guys. But like, we got to loosen it up a little bit and let those guys actually get out there and sweat with those guys, especially like during the summertime when we're on the road, like to be able to work with guys. Like Chris said, you have to get a manager maybe to work out for that extra couple of hours. Like, we should be able to do that. We should have our young guys and our staff be able to step in those roles.
I think that should change very fast, because in LA, every agency is out here. So if they can't work out with our grass, they're just going to work out with a runner. And then the runner going to tell them, hey, man, you averaging 6. Come on to the league. Your coach is tripping. So for me, I think that just because we're in LA, we got a million runners out here, right? And so they come in, your AAU coach, your high school coach. If they did that for us, that eliminates some of our players. We had like 3 in the past, put their name in the draft and did get drafted. They could work with our guys with unlimited hours.
Right.
I think that'd really help for us out here, because every agent is trying to get all these players right now early.
It's just been my experience over the last 26 years that the gym keeps kids out of trouble. If you're the NCAA, I don't understand how practical intelligence doesn't tell you that. If the kid is in the gym, he's not in the club, he ain't running the street, he's not doing things that get you in trouble in college. So that's something that really, really bothers me. That's something that we got to get changed. And the guys, it's still a bunch of lazy guys out here. Now, some guys don't want to get in the gym. Right. We are blessed here at Florida State. The new bloods, gotta get my plug in, Jeff. That we get kids with tremendous amount of humility that want to be gym rats. But it's hard dancing around that rule all the time. That definitely has to change. And the agent deal that Jason is talking about is real as real can get, especially with ACC and these Power 5 players.
I'll throw out real quick, from a media and consumer standpoint, I'd actually be interested to see what you guys as coaches feel, how it changes or doesn't change at the end of games. I understand that we're never going back to the way it was without monitor reviews,
but there are too many, and there have been instances, a lot of them in the past couple of seasons. Guys, you will be in a 3-point game with a minute to go. Take 15 minutes of real time. It is a terrible experience there. So my rule proposal is that once the monitor review begins, that process begins, once an official is looking, you get 60 seconds. You get 60 seconds or you stick with the call and that's it. So that if, even if you have three of these in the final minute of the game, like not, there was a Wisconsin Iowa game. I think it was the final regular season game this season. It took 20 minutes in real time to play the final 2 minutes of the game. This should just never happen there. I'm actually curious when that stuff is happening in you. And if you're dealing with all this, like almost comically, like what the hell are you talking about in the huddle for all that time? Like there's only so much you can say about a given situation there. And it's just, it's dead air. And it's something that college basketball severely needs to clean up, because we know we're never going back to not having it. So if we're going to have it, we have to almost protect the officials from themselves, so they can't be staring at the same thing for 5-6 straight minutes.
I'd say this, that starts though with them being reliable officials, right? And consistent officials. But what the NBA did that I like, obviously we've got the replay center, it's the caucus, right? So somebody else is looking at it. So when it happens, they go over to the monitor, the answers are being given to them. They're not, it's not there for them to decide. I would love to see each conference go to that, right? Because when you go to the monitor, now you, if you put a timer on it, it's about how long an NBA review takes, right? But at the end of the games too, you know, getting back to it is, I mean, there's a lot on the line here as well, right? These are, we're not playing for fun, right? We're putting roofs over heads, right? We're feeding kids through this game, paying for college educations, things like that. So to me, it's important that we get it right. It has to be gotten right. Because if you are on the short end of that stick on the losing side, right? And that could be the difference between somebody having a job or not having a job or this or that. Right. It is it's just unacceptable to me. So I like the thought of a review center. And to me, I also like the thought of, the coach's challenge being at the end, because we had that in the G League, during my time, all 3 years that I was in the G League, we used that challenge. And, to me, I thought that was valuable, right? If you really think you're right, throw out your time out there, put something on the, you know, put a little skin in the game.
All right. What else we got? Andre, what would you change?
Say Marvin. And it goes back to just playing stuff. I love the NBA rule of the last 2 minutes where they could advance the ball if the timeout to the side out of bounds. I think some of the great basketball minds and college basketball are going to get that pin and draw up something pretty in those situations. That would be one rule I'd like to see come down to college. I love watching the NBA games the last couple of minutes and see what those
make the game like. Make the game exciting to watch. Make games. Yeah.
There's something off the court, and now I know I'm a unicorn on this stance. The recruiting calendar drive me crazy. I don't think we should have one. I think if it's May 15th and I'm free and there's a tournament going on down the road, I should be able to go to it. I think every school's on different academic calendars, so you can't mandate when guys have breaks and when their kids ain't there. So allow us to go. I think it hurts the people that don't cheat by putting those calendars on us. And it takes away from us being able to have contact with a lot of families a lot of times because of the restrictions. And so the NCAA always talk about the third parties, these handlers and stuff. I think by letting us get out more, we could kind of eliminate some of the middlemen more because we could develop real relationships. So that's the only thing that drives me nuts, the actual calendar. I hate the calendar. I follow the rules and I'm going to do it, but I wish they would do away with the calendar and let us go when we want to.
Hey, Jeff. That's why Andre Gray is the best mid-major assistant in the country, and he needs to go up to a high-major job. Somebody get him a job, Jeff. That's a great thing.
I agree with that. I agree. Like, great. Let guys outwork other guys.
Right.
What's wrong with that? You want to work? You get the player. Now, again, sometimes you can still work as hard as you can, but if that other guy's doing some other shit, stuff, sorry, see why, then they're going to get the player. But if everything's equal, give it to the guy who's going to work. Yeah. So let guys go out whenever they want to go out. What's the big deal?
Well, the big deal is, sometimes you got to have some time for your wife or your family too. If we had to go out all the time, it would be like, you know, during your season. And
right, so have a dead period. Have a couple dead periods. August, yeah, dead. That. You know?
Yeah.
Where it's nobody can do anything.
But it's two rules that I want to see change. One is, I think it's corny to have a tied up possession basketball, and if some of the refs are not consistent, they give it a jump ball, give it to somebody else. So I think everything should be a jump ball. Agreed. Right? It's not rewarding. That's corny.
Yes.
And then the two things, I'm a father of a upcoming college student athlete. The NCAA shouldn't tell me I have to leave the gym when my son is not playing the AAU game. That's corny. Because I want to watch the game and say, hey, little Jason, see this dude over here when he dribble left? Watch it. I'm supposed to leave the gym when this game's over with, like I'm really entertaining and recruiting somebody else. So I think those rules are too much that they think we always on and we're not. I think they have to put a little bit more human, realistic with that.
This isn't a rule or anything, but I was curious, have you guys started talking about with your staff's game attire, just coming out of last year, what everybody was wearing? Are we going back to the suits or not?
I hope not.
Xavier won't. Xavier's going slacks pullover, baby. That's what we got.
All right. Already been decided. Hey, it saves money. Ain't no more tailor suits. Ain't no more cleaners bills. That's what I'm looking at financially.
Been decided, baby.
Mike Gray is still going with the shorts, right?
And we're going to Maui this year, so it might be shirtless too as well.
Rod, you better start working out more.
One rule that I would like to see change, and I didn't feel like this until we went over to the World Games and played, and when the ball is hit the rim, it's live. I thought the game was so much more exciting, more intense, and just a better flow and better pace of a game when you guys just going to get it right after, you know, right when that ball hit the rim, you could go snatch it off and you could save the little corny, as Jason, I like that word, the little corny, you know, goaltending calls and that, you know, man, let's play some basketball. Let's get in and go. I thought that was really, really fun. And all our guys liked it when we was over there in the World Game. So I think that would be something cool to bring to the game.
Yeah, that was on the table last week. And I don't know why. I was actually given the impression that they would have a good chance to go to the NIT experimental phase for, like, next season. It didn't even get there. The only feedback I got in advance of that was players at the American level haven't been taught to play that way, so there might have been some reticence over physicality around the rim. But I think the game is going to – like, Jarrett, I think it's headed that way. I think that will be a rule. Like, we'll look up in a decade, that will be a rule. I don't know why there was
– It took our players one or two games to kind of figure it out, and after that
– Right.
Yeah, let's go get it.
Also, it's one less thing for the official to have to worry about. Like, right. It just seems like the ultimate win-win. So, like, there were a couple of things that didn't get pushed through that were a little like, okay, I guess I kind of – that one kind of blew me away. It's like, there's no downside to this that I can possibly foresee. It's the FIBA rule. We should just implement it immediately, and they just opted not to. But I think if there was enough push from coaches, you know, in the next year and the year after that, like, you send this feedback to the people it needs to be sent to. You know, Barnes and Huggins are now going to be on the rules committee for the next year or two. Like, I think there's a chance that could actually get pushed through the next time they vote through rule stuff, because I don't know. It brings a certain excitement to the game. And again, it's one less thing for the officials. Anytime you can take something practically out of the officials' hands for the betterment of the game, it's just a no-brainer.
What else we got, guys? Any other ideas? Any other things that you absolutely hate in the game right now that should be changed?
Jeff, I don't know about that, but I want to remind everybody, fellas, this is a family show. Stop using profanity. Two, I got a question to Rod. Rod, what was the reason that you were in favor of the wider lane? I just wanted you to kind of elaborate on the wider lane.
Yeah, I just like see why, like, to be able to, you know, we were talking about the charge call earlier. Like, I just think that when you have a lane that's narrower, there's more, you know, to Rob's point, like, there's more contact near the rim, you know. And, you know, I grew up with the charge, but I do think there's too many charges in the game too, especially near the rim. So I thought that maybe could alleviate that problem a little bit by having, you know, guys further out from the basket. So, and, yeah. You know, so.
I'll piggyback on that, because I would love to see us go basically to FIBA rules. I like 24-second shot clock. I like the wide lane. But here's the thing about the wide lane, too, just piggybacking on that, you talk about space, right? The wide lane impacts the offensive player sitting in there for 3 seconds, right? Because we don't have a D3. So inherently what happens is the big guys have to cleanse further out away from the rim. So when they do that, we're still going to try to teach our guys to stay at that low man spot. But what are they going to do? right? They're going to have more of a tendency to follow that guy one or two steps even away from the rim, which then the caveat to that is on a drive on the right side, if my guy cleansed, right, himself over on the left side, it's further for that guy to go to get in position to take that charge. So there's less likelihood he can even make it there, right? So that's the thing that I love about the wide lane. I think that changes the game. And I do like 24-second shot clock because it speeds things up.
You guys like 24-second shot clock or no? Yes.
Overall, I like congruence. I think the better, the same reason high school basketball should have a shot clock. I mean, have congruence between high school to college to professional.
Only thing about that, because I'm being from Illinois and recruiting in Chicago, I mean, some of those guys can't even have enough money for bleachers or less known to put a shot clock. So I think a lot of people in the state of Illinois and Chicago want it, but it's just financially, where do the funds come from? You know, so I think that's a big thing that a lot of people think about. Let's put the shot clock in, but some of these communities and some of these cities, there's
but is it good for the college game to go 24? Are guys able to do that?
I like the 24, but I definitely think it would help if you had it, starting at the high school level.
Yeah.
My biggest pet peeve is when the referees telling kids to sit down after a celebration. Like, are you serious? Like, super corny, as Jason would say. Like, what? Like it was like you couldn't dunk the ball in warmups forever. You get a technical foul. Like, the game is for our players. Like, some of these kids never get in the game, and that's their time to. I was a guy that played behind four draft picks. So for me to bring something to the table and put my handprint on that team was to celebrate and bring energy. And now, as soon as I get up, I got a referee who's missing a call down this way telling me and my players to sit down. Like, little stuff like that is just like, come on now, let's play basketball and keep it moving.
Nothing worse than hanging on the rim calls. Nothing worse than the technicals. It's like, come on, man. Like, let him celebrate. As long as they're not doing two chin-ups, right, let them do what they want to do. Okay, so what do you got?
Just everybody kind of touching on everything in terms of 24-second shot. I kind of am a fan of that as well. I think what we're doing is, as a organization, we want to play faster. And so what would be better than speeding the game over 24-second shot clock to get a quick hitter, to get more transition baskets, to make the player stand out better? So I think everybody touching on a lot of different points. I would like to see, to be honest with you, away with the whole 10-second call in the backcourt. That's just, I mean, I don't understand the point of it. Just why? Like, I mean, it's a situation where I just see refs doing this and they don't even do it a lot because it's just forgotten rule. So why even just kind of have it?
That's interesting, because if you got a pit bull picking up 94 feet. I need that 10 seconds, baby.
I was going to say move it to 8, man. Move it to 8 like the league.
Yeah, true.
Hey,
then everybody's going to be pressing, man. They'll be working hard.
Pressing will be irrelevant, man.
Mr. Frazier going to come off the bench and take a charge.
I love the young fella from Jackson State, but I need that 10-second line too, fella.
I got you.
What about other recruiting rules, guys? You guys are obviously involved in recruiting more than anybody else. Is there anything else that you would change there? Again, you know, my whole deal is lessen the amount of restrictions. What specifically is there anything else that, like, I loved years ago when I first broke in and did recruiting, there were things that you could do to be creative when you went to events to stand out from everybody else. Like, I miss that. Listen, the summer to me sucks now compared to how it used to be. It used to be fun. It used to have characters. You used to be able to be creative. Now it's like none of that.
Yeah. Our Tina was coming to the games with TJ Ford t-shirts.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the Baylor shirts, right? How big they were. And then didn't they like ban the size? They couldn't have the lettering.
Did they really do that?
I mean, listen, you had John Beilein yelling at dudes because they were standing in front of doorways. Like, come on. Like stuff's just got to loosen up in recruiting and have fun. And like you guys said, it's all about the kids. Like, let them have fun. And I think part of it is the promotional part of it. I think we lost it. I'm not the biggest Sonny Vaccaro guy, in the world, but that dude knew how to promote, didn't he? I mean, we had like a Sebastian Telfair, Darius Washington matchup at ABCD that was bigger than like LeBron against Kawhi. That's the way we all thought it was. And now there's no juice in any of the buildings.
We got turned in. Me and Yurik Malagi were at SMU. We just signed Keith Frazier, Emmanuel Mudiay, and we were trying to get Jordan Mickey. And we printed some shirts, Nike shirts, that said, ain't nothing wrong with staying at home. It didn't have nothing personal, but his family, everybody knew what we was talking about. But we had schools turn us in because we had a shirt that said, ain't nothing wrong with staying at home. It's like, come on, like you ain't doing your job if you worried about somebody wearing a T-shirt. But it's that petty and corny.
And from a recruiting standpoint, you gotta allow people to outwork people. I hate the rules that don't allow people to outwork. Hey, if you want to be a boring, not working extra dude, that's on you. You want to stay home, that's on you. Mm-hmm. I'm a silverback gorilla. I want this boy.
Yeah, so let me ask you this.
I'm gonna follow the bus if I have to. I want Thaddeus Young. I'm following the bus. Now, if you don't want to do it, that's on you. You got to let guys outwork guys.
You following that bus even with a stop?
Man, listen, I told Paul Hewitt, hey, listen, the bus is leaving at 4:30.
Yeah.
Need directions. The bus always going to the game. I follow the bus.
I'll put that in my back pocket.
I'll get you directions at 7:30.
Well, it'll be interesting because it's been out of sight, out of mind, because we've been dead here for so long and we didn't have a summer last summer. But it'll be interesting to see if we go back to the three AAU weekends, so to speak, in July. Because, I mean, I always liked that during the summertime, man. You were able to cover a lot of ground and see a lot of guys and see the best players, play against the best players, which I think is always big with us as far as evaluations. I think we're going to go to that, you know, but then is it going to change after the summer? Are we going to go back to the NCAA camps? I guess we are, you know. I have to be, you know, because Mike was president of the NABC, so, you know, he had to be on board with the NCAA camps. I mean, I don't know how you guys felt when 2 years ago when we did it, but, you know, it just, you know, the best players didn't play in that, you know, so it's going to be interesting. Hopefully, you know, we'll get back to that this summer, but then what's going to happen, you know, moving forward, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'll say
that. Rod, they voted on that. It should vote next Wednesday, but it's the 8th through the 11th, 16th through the 18th, and 22nd through the 25th. The thing for me is, like CY said, in recruiting, everybody going to run to the Adidas, Under Armour, and Nike. But it's going to be a lot of pros who couldn't prove themselves in high school to get on the elite AAU teams in the side gym. So my thing is, allow more side gym AAU NCAA certified so I can go sneak and find me a pro.
Amen.
Everybody gonna be in that gym, the EYBL. I pass.
But,
I'm gonna go.
But Jason, that's only gonna be like for this summer, right, Jason? Like next summer, it's gonna go back to the camps, I think. You know, we're gonna have the Peach Jam sort of weekend, you know, and then.
Well, that camp I went to, the one in Phoenix, and I never knew a kid named Alex Fudge. I was like, who is he? So it's some. If you're looking at the right stuff, you can find something. And they give
younger guys
the opportunity to be seen in like another setting. So I didn't mind that. That was cool. But
well, that being said, I'm a Peach fan. I love the Peach Jam. I like the peaches. I like to watch the 15s and 16s. I like to. I like to see it.
You was at Kansas. You recruiting the elite. I got to find me. Dude, we have four, quote-unquote, low majors in the NCAA tournament this year. This year, our team, we started.
You beat us by 30 in the tournament. What are you talking about?
But let me tell you, though. We had a kid transfer from Rice. Hey, look, Jarence, we had a kid transfer from Rice who was low major out of high school. Wolford.
Jace, I
came
know
off the bench at Santa Clara.
Scott report. I know everybody on your team, yeah.
You said Wolford? So I got to go find them before they go to Rice now. I don't want them to go to Rice no more. Just come on to us.
You know, it's Wofford. Jason, it's Wofford, not Wofford.
Oh, Wofford. Hey, he was balling. He was balling. First,
he was making everybody say, whoa.
Oh. Hey, how about this rule, though? If you spend all this time recruiting and developing a relationship with these kids and parents, and then when you see them out at the AU events, you got to turn turn away because some. Like you can, like I'm scared to even say do anything. Like
hey, I missed the lines.
Come on now.
I miss years ago with the lines when coaches would be standing there and it'd be literally
I was in high school there.
Man, yeah, that was
especially that was in Vegas, fun. Right, Jeff? Especially in Vegas. Like,
yes, I miss it all. Like one of my favorite things ever was first when I was breaking into recruiting, Ed Cooley was there and he went up to me. It was Ramel Bradley at ABCD, and he said to me, he goes, "Hey, can you do me a favor? Can you tell that kid that BC that we're going to offer him a scholarship?" And I looked at him. I said, "But like your head coach isn't even he? Like Al Skinner hasn't even seen him." He's like, "Just tell him we're offering him." I'm like, "I'm not telling him you're offering him a scholarship." Like the shit that went on again, Charlton. I'm sorry. Listen, you can bleep me out. Doster will bleep me out later. It's okay. Gives him something to do. He doesn't talk. He might as well edit. But I think there was so much entertainment with the summer that is lost now. And the NCAA just tries to take away all the fun away from everything. And again, like to me, we got to bring the fun back into the game somehow, whether it's AU, whether it's college, whether it's recruiting, whatever it is. Like the in-home visit is gone. Those were the best things ever. The in-home visit stories were the best stories ever. They're gone now. How many in-home visits you guys do now?
Zoom.
Zooms, baby.
Well, with COVID, I don't think nobody really running to that home. But CY said with the Thaddeus Young, he may go in and do some home visits. Hey, that guy's out working. If you want to die, I'm vaccinated. Jim, I'm vaccinated, so I'm going into homes as many as I can. I'm vaccinated, so I'm going
in there if I'm not vaccinated for Thaddeus Young. I'll deal with that later.
Jeff, you make good points. That stuff is awesome. Like, you remember the at-home visits of sitting out with grandma and mama. And
yeah,
I miss it personally. Again, I've missed
not. It helps you coach the kid when you get them, too.
Yeah. So home visits are still legal now. It's COVID. Shut it down.
Like,
y'all scare me now. They didn't get home, did it?
No, I'm just saying there weren't that many of them. Even before COVID, they still had kind of come to a standstill for the most part. They weren't like they used to be.
Yeah, I don't like doing home visits. Like kids say, sometimes they'd be embarrassed or, you know, family dynamic. But
yeah,
when they tell me, we're going to do it at the school, it's something about going into that home where they lay their head and break bread. So, like, but I always deny, like, no. Nah, we don't want to do the school. I've been at the school. I need to be at mama house or nanny house, somebody house, because it's different. It's different.
Hey, one more thing, Chris, Kasem, what the difference now? Is there anything you guys would do as mid major guys to try to make it more of an equal playing field? Is there anything in recruiting with the restrictions that hurts you maybe more than hurts these guys?
When it comes to recruiting, everything I know I've learned from CY. So I think for us, no, I don't. I think there's a pecking order. There's a natural pecking order that takes place. You know, I've been at some different places, some different levels, and I think it always works out. If you work hard, you do a good job, you treat people the right way, and try to work like CY is saying, I think you're going to get the guys. You try to identify. Jason was talking about a young man we had at Rice, Drew Peterson. You try to identify, you know, evaluation is where it's at. And so at the end of the day, evaluate, recruit, win some, lose some. CY used to always say you bat 300 in this thing, you're pretty good. So for me, that's how I view it.
You guys did a hell of a job. I had two kids, a kid at Virginia, he made some noise too. So yeah, guys did a good job. I'm just done with the whole people telling me who low major, mid major, because now the high majors is stealing anything at the mid or low to average 16 points. So the days of sending me the pan for that to tell me who's not good enough in their pan, I don't even want to see it. Them scouting things, I don't even want to see that.
Jason Hart is absolutely right. I mean, the key to it is evaluating stealing. Fellas, Devin Vassell went 11 to the Spurs for us. I was in a recruiting war with Presbyterian in North Florida. You know, they laughed at me when I signed Devin Vassell. You know what I mean? Laughed at me. I mean, he was playing in the Big Shots tournament.
Well, I want to laugh at you. I was right down the road. We tried to get. Yeah, I didn't want nobody laughing at you. No, that one was right there. That was a true eval right there, brother. That is a classic case of you outworking people, knowing what the hell you're looking for. See it. You stuck to your guns. You laid on the tracks for that dude, and that's what he got.
I think that's a lost art in our game too, especially at a high level of evaluation.
Oh yeah.
It's a lost art. People go off on who recruiting who or who got these many offers. I trust my eyes, but it's a lost art.
And I'm not. But if your boss in your school is chasing having the number one and two recruiting class, then those kids are still going to get handed over to other programs. It's with your boss or what the school want. Like, you want a heavy recruiting class or you want some good players?
I'm going to say this. I respect Jairus and Kansas. I mean, they had a backcourt of Devontae Graham, who was going to App State, and Frank Mason, who was going to Towson State.
Correct.
That's a great evaluation now. I mean, people, they think that that's a blue blood, high major program, but those two low to mid major guards, people said.
You got to give Curtis Townsend credit because if I'm not mistaken, he went to go see Jordan McLaughlin, who went to SC. And they was in that back room. KT was in that back room, side gym in Vegas. Frank had one part of his hair braided and the other half not braided. And KT went to go see Jordan. And he like, man, who was this little kid picking up this dude 94 feet? And he called the AAU coach and he said, is this a fluke? Went back the next day and offered him. So trust in my eyes.
Jonas Hayes is getting pretty good at it too. He stole the kid from St. Francis that I laid in bed 3 days watching Law and Order when I lost him the exam.
Hey, was that track athlete, the one that can run the 40 and 4.1 seconds?
Last name Odin. But hey, key word for everybody on this call, back gym. That's the last thing I'm gonna say.
Most definitely.
See why I won't hang with you at the Peach this year, baby. You know, we normally get together at the Peach. I see you, Jairus. I'm going at South Carolina tournament.
I will be at Peach then. We can have Peaches together. I will be there with my hoodie.
And you're going to have some Nikes on, Jairus. You out the Medinas, baby. Now you can throw some Air Max on.
Jason, you're going to be at Josie High School. That's where you're going to be at. Exactly.
I'm going to be over there. I'm just going to be there the third day. But the first 2 days, I'm at Peach Jam, baby.
Jairus misses that long break in the middle of Peach Jam from 10 years ago when you see everybody at the pool.
Yeah, buddy.
Appreciate everybody jumping on for this. This was good. This was a chance to kind of talk about the rules and the good, the bad, the ugly. And we'll do it again. We'll have everybody back. Make sure, again, everybody listening, Coaches Candid Conversations. Every single week we'll have different coaches, different topics. And let's hope all of them are as candid as Jason Hart was today. I like it. I like it, Jay.
Hey, fellas. On the count of three, let's see who can get to the portal the fastest.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.